hear our tears on my pillow that won't dry on their own beyond my ears. I've no sorrow, but today I don't walk alone. Step by step, step by step, I'm on the road to recovery, trusting God along the way, trusting God along the way, trusting God all the way.
All right, you guys ready to have a meeting? Let's try to get situated here. All right, before all this shenanigans get started, before we invite God in, before we start the meeting, we're going to have Ryan come up and do a quick joke for us. So that's fun. This is Peter's favorite part of the meeting.
I am Ryan, I'm an alcoholic.
All right, stop me if you heard it. An alcoholic was looking for a parking space, and he was late for a meeting. He circled and circled, but there were no parking spaces to be found. Finally, he cried out, "God, please, please help me find a parking space." Just then, a car pulled out of a space right in front of him. "Never mind," said the alcoholic, "one just opened up."
Welcome to the Fort Lauderdale Primary Purpose Big Book Study Group's Thursday Night Alcoholics and God Speaker Step Series. We really got to shorten that. I'm a recovered alcoholic. My name is Danny.
Hi, Danny.
Thanks for joining us tonight. In a minute, we're going to start our two-minute meditation, so please take a moment to get situated. Please turn off all devices that make noise or might slash will distract others. Take this time to get connected to God. Let the craziness of the day drift away and ask God to help you stay focused on the step study tonight. Is everybody ready?
Ready.
Heck yeah. All right. If so, let's start this meditation. If you guys wouldn't mind joining me in the fog light prayer, if you don't know it, it's that thing. And also you could just repeat after me. God, Let your love shine through me like a fog light, so those who are lost, sick, and dying can find your love through me. Amen. There is a solution from the big book, page 17. The tremendous fact for every one of us is that we have discovered a common solution. We have a way out on which we can absolutely agree and upon which we can join in brotherly and harmonious action. This is the great news this book carries to those who suffer from alcoholism. I have asked, or actually I forgot to ask somebody, so I'm going to put someone on the spot, and Harrison is going to come up and read Appendix 2, Spiritual Experience. We read this... Yeah, Harrison. He is handsome. We read this book... We read this because the main purpose of the 12 steps is to have one, so it's kind of important to know what one is.
Hey, I'm Harrison. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Harrison.
A spiritual experience. The term spiritual experience and spiritual awakening are used many times in this book, which, upon careful reading, shows that the personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism has manifested itself among us in many different forms. Yet it is true that our first printing gave many readers the impression that the personality changes or religious experiences must be in the nature of sudden and spectacular upheavals. Happily for everyone, this conclusion is erroneous. In the first few chapters, a number of sudden revolutionary changes are described. Though it was not our intention to create such an impression, many alcoholics have nevertheless concluded that in order to recover, they must acquire an immediate and overwhelming God consciousness, followed at once by a vast change in feeling and outlook. Among our rapidly growing membership of thousands of alcoholics, such transformations, though frequent, are by no means the rule. Most of our experiences are what the psychologist William James called the educational variety, because they develop slowly over a period of time. Quite often, friends of the newcomer are aware of a difference long before he is himself. He finally realizes that he has undergone a profound alteration in his reaction to life, that such a change could hardly have been brought about by himself alone. What often takes place in a few months could seldom have been accomplished by years of self-discipline. With few exceptions, our members find that they have tapped an unsuspected inner resource, which they presently identify with their own conception of a power greater than themselves. Most of us think this awareness of a power greater than ourselves is the essence of spiritual experience. Our more religious members call it God consciousness. Most emphatically, we wish that any alcoholic capable of honestly facing his problems in the light of our experience can recover, provided he does not close his mind to all spiritual concepts. He can only be defeated by an attitude of intolerance or belligerent denial. We find that no one need have difficulty with the spirituality of the program. Willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are the essentials of recovery, but these are indispensable. There is a principle, which is a bar against all information, which is proof against all arguments, and which cannot fail to keep a man in everlasting ignorance. That principle is contempt prior to investigation. Herbert Spencer.
Thank you, Harrison. Please refrain from disturbing others by talking or constantly getting up and sitting back down. This is a tech-free meeting, so set your phone to airplane meeting mode or just turn them straight off. Would be cool, too. All right, so we have Peter coming up here for his 11th week. I could stand up here and say a lot of stuff that's very nice about Peter, even though we haven't even really had that many interactions together. I know that when I was early in sobriety, I would have to walk from my sponsors... From my house to my sponsor's house to do step work, and when I was doing that, Peter was the first speaker that I listened to on my earphones and on my iPod and stuff like that. And listening to him doing those walks was the first time I ever felt the want to communicate with God. And so, I could say a bunch of nice stuff, but I'd rather have Peter come up here and do some ranting and do some talking, and hopefully you guys experience the same thing that I experienced. So, Peter.
Thank you. Okay. My name is Pete. I'm a recovered alcoholic. I'm grateful to be alive and sober and part of a sacred place called Alcoholics Anonymous. And I am a drunk without anything in the tank tonight, man. I got to tell you. We had a wardrobe malfunction, which is very vital to me. And Almost canceled the meeting because of a wardrobe tonight. So I'm glad to be here. Glad to be most places today. Be able to do what God allows me to do and experience some of the favor he has given me. I've said a million times there are things that I don't do well at all. If you ask me to balance your checkbook, you'll be on poverty, in poverty tomorrow, and your business will go out of business. If you ask me to hang up a picture on your wall, I'll hang it up. It'll be crooked, and there'll be 55 holes behind that picture. I lived in Boca Raton. I put up a picture over my kitchen sink, one of these inspirational things, and I almost hit a main water pipe and flooded the building. But there are other things that God has given me some favor with. And I never claim to be a good sponsor, but there's something that happens in me when I am talking to another alcoholic. And things come to me. There's another dimension that happens to me when I'm sitting down with the drunk, that the language I'm giving them is not of me. And sometimes that just comes from the work we do, to chopping wood and carrying water in the trenches when no one's looking, and serving God and worshiping God and asking God, how can I best serve thee? Your will, not mine, be done. And when the time is right and the ground is fertile, God gives you something to go. Would you ever speak to someone and something comes out of the mouth and say, that was pretty good, where'd that come from? Well, we get to experience that regularly. And so I'm grateful for that, because I know what my life was like before. June 23rd, 1988 was my separation from alcohol. I'm a recovered alcoholic. Thank the good Lord for that. Today I'm a recovered alcoholic. I have no idea what tomorrow will bring. But today and tonight, I can say with some okayness about it, without being pretentious, I'm a recovered alcoholic. But that's today. But before my life in Alcoholics Anonymous, I was not a responsible person. I had no integrity. I wasn't ethical. I was a liar, cheat, and a thief like most of us. And whether that was strictly due to being an alcoholic before I picked up a drink, I was just a dysfunctional human being, probably a combination of the two, some environment and some belief systems. But by the time I hit puberty and by the time I got my first drink in me, things went sideways quick. And I've been thinking about this the past few days. I did a talk last night on step 12, and it kind of came out a little bit. And I've been sitting with, like, what happens to folks like us, even civilians, where thought and time comes into play? I see children, their little high chair, and mama's feeding them. They're not worried about dinner. In fact, they're not even concerned with the clothes they're wearing. As long as mama's close by, it's cool. And if you see a little baby in a high chair, got food all over them, they're totally cool with that. And I guess I was the same way, running around in my pajamas, watching Walt Disney cartoons, and everything was groovy. Everything was good. Mama was close by, even though she was drunk, but she was close by, and that was a good thing. And I had a friend, his name was Joe Pesci, just like the actor. And we were best friends growing up. And what he would do in the morning, in the summertime, all my good memories that I can think of happened in the summer. All my bad memories I always see in wintertime. That's why I love warm weather. It just brings me back to a good piece of my childhood. And Joey would come into my driveway, we're all but seven, in his pajamas, right out of bed on his little bike. Back then, we had the big banana seats, and we used to put baseball cards in the spokes, so it would make like an engine as you're rolling down the block. And back in the day, believe it or not, you can let your 7 or 8-year-old go play without worrying about the kid being kidnapped like nowadays. And so he would call my name from the driveway, and I'd hop out of bed, run downstairs, hop on a bike, and we'd do our thing. We'd just drive around on a summer morning, and we'd come back, and my mom would make us breakfast, and that was pretty cool. I didn't think once that I'm in my pajamas, you know, riding around on this bike, making this ridiculous noise. And then my mom, every once in a while, would leave like a quarter on the kitchen cabinet, and we'd go get an egg cream at Max's candy store and maybe a piece of gum. And go back to my house. Egg creams in Brooklyn were a big thing, all for a quarter. And one day, Joey and I were having our egg cream, and some gentleman happened to walk in, and he said something like, probably just laughing at us, like, you believe these two kids running around in their pajamas on their bicycles? He's probably on his way to work, and so these two knuckleheads, just nothing derogatory. But what I heard in my mind is, look at these two morons running around in their pajamas. What idiots. And that moment, I think, is the very first time I touched ego, thought, and time. I touched my reputation and how I appeal to others. I never rode the bike again with Joey in the morning. When he would come into the driveway, I'd say, let's go in the pool. We had a little pool in the backyard. Let's go in the pool instead. Let's watch TV till my mom wakes up and she'll make us breakfast. I never got on the bike and rode through the neighborhood innocently like I did because something happened that particular moment where the ego woke up, the self-centeredness woke up, the self woke up, and how I appear to other people became important. And that has carried me right till this moment. Has been with me, I should say. The difference between when it really was flourishing and, say, tonight, it's less. And sometimes doesn't even breathe. It goes dormant. And that is only because, not by wishful thinking or not by attending meetings, that is only because a surrender to God, where prayer brings a debt to every identity that does not come from God. I don't get my identity on most days from even what people think or what people say. Sometimes I do. And that's just my brokenness. And I think if anyone said they didn't have that anymore, they're lying. The self manifested in various ways is what had defeated us. That self is not looking to go anywhere. That'll be with me. My self will be with me. My ego will be with me till the day they put me in the ground. My goal is to reduce it down to maybe just a pulse, just this thing in the background. And the way I keep it at bay is by the chopping wood and carrying water. And so the 11th step for me becomes incredibly vital the longer I'm sober. Mary and I talk about this a lot. The dedication to God, the dedication to prayer, the dedication to inventory, the dedication to meditation is so vitally important, so vital now with 29 years sober, perhaps even more than when I was first coming in the door and deaf, dumb, and blind. I had no clue what was going on. I was just bouncing off walls. I was too raw and too sound asleep spiritually to even touch what was real and what wasn't. And only because the teachers in here, the elders that were put in my path, did they say, go this way and go that way. Don't speak this way. You need to speak that way. I was sharing last night at my first AA anniversary. Get up there and they give me my coin and you get about 10, 15 minutes and you introduce a speaker for your anniversary. I drop more F-bombs in 15 minutes than I think I've done in my entire life. I saw nothing wrong with it. My family was sitting right in front of me. I didn't think anything of it. And when the meeting was over, you know, I had balloons and cake and coins and cards and all this pomp and circumstance, and all my family's there. All these people show up to see Pete if he really was sober. And my sponsor did this. He was sitting in the kitchen and he leaned out. And you know when a sponsor does this to you? My sponsor did this to me. Now, my first sponsor was this guy, Tony. Tony was about 5'2", 5'3", and his hands were as big as this podium. He's one of those guys who can rip a tree out of the ground. He's this tall. And when he did this, you were in trouble. And I went to the kitchen, and I says, what? And he went up one side and down the other on me. And he dropped a lot of F-bombs on me, dropping F-bombs from the sacred place of a podium and a place called Alcoholics Anonymous. How inappropriate I was. He didn't care about my first year anniversary. Oh, you're a miracle. Way to go. He says, we got to fix you now. None of my sponsors were, you know, you're a miracle. I'm so happy for you. They were not butterflies and rainbow guys. They were giving me the truth. And so thank the good Lord, I don't think I've ever used any kind of that language at an AA meeting, especially behind the podium. Because I wanted to get right with you. I wanted to be a part of this. My life depended upon it. And everyone told me the only way that's going to happen is by getting in there and working on this relationship with God. And it was more than just me going home and praying. It was about removing the self, removing the ego, getting the ego grinded into dust where I was completely raw, stripped of everything. The place where prayer can really flourish is when we get empty in here, where we get removed from ideas, emotions, slogans, attitudes, which give us identity, a false identity, and even some of those belief systems, those accolades that we might get, we think bring us salvation, and all they do is bring us empty. Nothing. And if you're new, I will tell you, as you do this work in 4 through 9, don't expect butterflies and rainbows. But what happened to me, we will get free, we will get healed, we will get recovered, but along the way, We will come face to face with our own self, the biggest demon on the planet, the thinking mind. We will come face to face with the things that have been killing us that we thought were working. I came face to face with no longer blaming you for the troubles in my life, but taking responsibility for every one of them. Because somewhere, and I had my finger in someone's belt loop, I was responsible over and over and over again. Now, when I'm drunk, I'm not responsible and held accountable, but my behavior. I had to look at my behavior on paper. And the only power, because I saw you guys talking about it and giving testimony, the only power is going to free me of me. Which meant free me of my alcoholism. My soul is in alcoholism. Our soul is in alcoholism. Alcoholism is a thing that invades me and takes me as the host and lives off of me like a parasite. The only thing that's going to get rid of that is God. You know, if I'm sitting on a bench outside and having a cigarette or smoking a cigar and having a cup of coffee with some friends, and I look down, there's this big spider on my arm, the first reaction is to hit it off, get rid of it. It's this thing that doesn't belong there, and I'm afraid of it. It's going to do me harm. Yet with alcoholism, the spider, we look at it and say, wow, that's pretty cool, I'll feed it. It'll go away. I'll wish it away. And I'm the host and it just lives off me. That's alcoholism. So I need to get right with the soul. I need to go in. That's why this big book is an inward journey to get right with the soul and free ourselves of this thing. Cured? Never. Recovered? Absolutely. And recovering is settled for just looking at the spider, praying it doesn't bite. Knowing at some point it's going to take a bite out of me. I just don't know when. Recovered is I remove the thing. It's really interesting. In order to be fulfilled spiritually, I need to completely purge myself of me. I need to be emptied out in order to be fulfilled. In order to hold on to God, I need to let go of everything I think about God. In fact, I will tell you this. My experience has been this. Is that a newcomer back there? That was me my whole first year, by the way. Yeah. Does she want to sponsor me? I need a sponsor. No. I hold on to God. I get a relationship with God by letting go. And everything I have found out over the years, everything I thought was God was not. Because if I can come up with what I think God is, it's me coming up with that conception. How could I possibly do that? Ideas, maybe? Wishful thinking? But the only God I can talk to you about is the one I've experienced. I'm a Catholic. I grew up with the carpenter. We see pictures of him. I don't know what he looks like. But I can tell you about the experiences God has freely given me and given you because I've heard your stories. You bear witness for me when you give testimony in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'll just get on a soapbox a minute. How many of our meetings do we go to? How many conferences do we attend? 3-4 speakers, 6 speakers, 8 speakers at a conference. How many workshops do we attend over the course of a year? And incredible information. People turning this into Zen stuff. Incredible stuff. Know the mechanics. Know where the commas are. Know what kind of mood Bill was in when he wrote How It Works. I mean, they know everything. And you won't hear the word God mentioned once. I've gone to many conferences, 8 speakers over a weekend. Never heard the word God. Heard a lot of stuff. Good stuff. But not about God. My Alcoholics Anonymous is about taking that information, which brings me to God, and sharing about this power called God, because that is the only power that's going to relieve me of this thing a day at a time, and gives me an undercurrent of, I don't know how, I don't know when, but I'm going to be okay, I know I'm going to be okay, I'll just keep plowing the field. Imagine doing this on our own, a head full of knowledge and a belly full of beer has been the result. So they give me directions what to do. Book says on awakening. It doesn't say around 2 in the afternoon when you're in the mood. It doesn't say wake up, 6 Red Bulls and a carton of cigarettes. Now let's go home. It says on awakening. The reason why my book tells me on awakening, because they knew me if they waited till around 9 in the morning. That means I'm running the show from 5. Bad things are about to happen. An idiot just took over my life. It's me. When I was new, there was a gentleman, Vince Dowling, my first elder in Alcoholics Anonymous. I met Vince right before I went to Minnesota, and then we maintained this wonderful friendship, and I had maybe 14 days, maybe. Vince had 30 years. And he sat with me one day, and he says, tell me what your morning's like. I said, well, I wake up, have some coffee, you know, take a shower, put on my clothes, pray, go to work, come home from work, go to a meeting, have some dinner, pray, go to bed. He says, let me get this right. So you do about 3-4 things in the morning before you pray. I didn't know where he was going. I said, well, yeah, I guess. He said, so between the time you wake up and you pray, about an hour goes by. He says, yeah. He says, who's stopping you from getting drunk on awakening to the time you pray? You, which means you're going to get drunk. What's preventing you from running out the door as soon as you open up your eyes? You wait a whole hour to make conscious contact with God. The only power that's going to be the spiritual airbag between me and a drunk. And he had me. I had no answer. And so on awakening, I pray. And that's been my life for the longest time now. On awakening, in bed, thank you, in bed, as soon as my eyes open, thank you, God, for this day. First connection. Then I have a prayer room. And I was taught this a long time ago. Create a space in your home, anywhere in the home. Even if it's one by one, it's your place. I have a meditation mat. I have a little altar. Nothing fancy. It's not the cathedral in Manhattan, but it's something. I have things that represent my religion. I have some Eastern things to the left of it. I have some personal items there that were given to us by folks in Alcoholics Anonymous. Very precious things. Pictures of my whole lineage and the teachers in my path on the wall. A beautiful picture of a cathedral. All things that speak God. Now, they're just ornaments, but it creates a mood. It creates a culture. And I honor that. And that's where I go to. And so on awakening, my thing is now I get on my knees. I'm not too big to get on my knees. I knew a person in AA. We were at a Fellowship of the Spirit in Queens one time, and Don Pritt says, let's all get on knees, hold hands, and do the third step prayer. And this person says, well, I don't get on my knees. That's not my religion. And someone said to them, how many times you get on your knees for another hit of crack? They got on their knees and prayed with us. Now, you do what you want. But it's a sign of humility when I drop to my knees. Now, if you have a bad back and an injured knee, I get it. But if I'm willing to, if I'm able to do that, I drop to my knees and I begin with prayer. And it's basically a prayer of surrender. Surrendering the day to God. Surrendering me to God. I surrender my body, my mind, my spirit, my career, my relationship, everything to this power to do with me as you see fit today. Because even though I may have great plans and designs, they may fly in direct conflict with his plans and designs, which are always better. Because I can only see to the end of the room. He can see 5 years from now. That this has to be removed now to fulfill this goal that I have for you. Because I came to Alcoholics Anonymous by his doing to go to work for him. And he can't have anything in the way. God will create things in my life that I deem as bad. Like I'm getting sent the trials of Job. And God's going, no, I need you to stay away from this. I need you to pay attention to me. And God will go to any lengths to get our attention. Any lengths means removal of a job, means he's really giving me and really loves me. Removal of a relationship, I go, how could God do this to me? Because he loves me and cares me and needs to reel me in. Because I'm here to work for him. And a new baby like that, to be a mama or a daddy to a baby like that, rather than out smoking crack or drinking and leaving the baby home. She brought a meeting to a baby. That's a hero. She's here with her kid. See that? I don't know if he's too happy, but, you know. She better applaud when I'm done. As I go through the day, as we go through the day, we think about some things. There are many voices that talk to me, right? And I don't say that outside of Alcoholics Anonymous because they'll cart me away. I'm hearing voices, right? But if you think about it, even now while I'm speaking, you have voices going on. I don't like this guy. I do like this guy. What time are we going to eat? Where are we going to go eat? I got a tough day at work tomorrow. I got to bring the car in for an oil change. I need to get a divorce. I need to find somebody. This is all while the meeting's going on. And we have that money voice that talks to us. They got to make money, got to be financially secure, have money for a rainy day, make sure when I retire I have money, got to get money, got to get money, got to make money, need more money, got enough money, on and on and on. All day long we listen to that voice. We got the body voice. I'm too tall, I'm too short, I'm too fat, I'm too thin, I need to go to the gym constantly, I need to fit into these clothes. That's my dilemma right now. Nothing fits. That voice is talking all day long. Got the career voice. I need to be better. I need to do more. I need to own. I need to take over. Things like that. Got that voice. The relationship voice. I got to get out of this relationship. I need to get into relationship. Then we get into relationship. The voice says, I know I need to get out now. We listen to all those voices all day long. How often do I listen to the other voice that's consistent, pristine, all love, no opposite, and is not attached to anything earthly? That's the God voice, the spiritual voice that says, call Joe. You haven't heard from him in a while. Offer your hand to that person. Help that woman in Publix to a car with all those packages. Smile at someone when you're walking down the street, even though they look grumpy. Be forgiving instead of holding a grudge. Call your sponsor, see how he's doing, rather than you always telling him how you're doing. Come out of a meditation, someone comes to you in your mind, call them. That's that other voice. But I'm so much listening to the voices here, I can't hear the God voice there. And if it does show up, it's foreign. But if I would just pump the brakes once and pay attention to that voice, I will see how I'm able to wear the world like a loose garment, because those other things, we live in a world of impermanence, they're going to come and go. Money's going to come and go. Anyone in this room, unless you're incredibly fortunate, who's sober a long time, has had money and been low on money, has been in relationships and been out of relationships. And if you're around my age or older, you've had some health scares from time to time. That's life. Things come and go and people die. To hold on to that, to give me a sense of identity and salvation and an okayness, is lunacy. So I need to start listening, literally listening for the godly voice. And I'm going to pay for this presumption, all sorts of absurd actions and ideas. My book says I might think I'm listening to God, but I'm really not. But at least I'm searching and listening and seeking this power. And he's pleased. He's pleased. That little child's going to get into the first or second grade. Remember we used to draw little pictures and cards for Mama and Dad on Mother's Day and Father's Day, the worst drawings on the planet. Mom and Dad would put it on the refrigerator. Look what my, he's a genius. Right? It's a horrible thing. It doesn't even look good. But parents are pleased because the kid tried. Have I gotten bigger than a child in God's eyes? That even though I'm seeking, I'm missing the mark, but I'm seeking this relationship with God through prayer, through meditation, through inventory. I'm chopping wood and carrying water. I'm in the trenches, and I'm looking to help another drunk. On top of all of this, this is completely a huge contrast from the way I used to live. He's pleased. I get another day sobriety. Because that's all we can do, is one day sobriety. Can't do 2 days at a time. As an alcoholic, I won 20 years in the first month. And those cats always get into trouble. They want to be there, and they got to be here first. So on awakening, my book says, let's think about the 24 hours ahead. We consider our plans for the day. I ask that my thinking be divorced from self-pity, dishonest, and self-seeking motives. In other words, get out of the way, Pete. Get your mind out of the way. That self-centered person, that self-seeking person, the person with the motives is always armed and dangerous anyway. Let's get him out of the way. What does God want me to do? That's a prayer. Father, what do you need for me to do today? Let me go to work for you. And some days it's just getting up, going to work, coming home, having dinner, talking, watching some TV, and going back to bed. Take a couple calls. As simple as that. In the sense of the order, in the ordinary life, it actually is extraordinary. The folding laundry, I always joke about this, the folding laundry on a Saturday night where my friends are at a ball game maybe or at a concert or at some conference, and I'm folding towels and putting them in the closet. and making a little dinner and watching TV on a Saturday night. That very ordinary thing is extraordinary. Because how many Saturday nights was I locked up in jail saying I did it again? And I had no idea how I got here. Come out of a blackout in a jail cell. How'd I get here? What did I do now? Right? On a Saturday night. I'll fold towels every Saturday night. I'm home. I'm safe. Bills are paid. I'm healthy. Someone I love is with me. Everything's good. Everything's good. I have hope for the next day. Compared to the lights are out, no one's home, I want to die on a Saturday night. And when you're living in the back of an abandoned building, you don't care if it's Saturday or Tuesday afternoon, you're in the back of an abandoned building where I landed. And all you do is pray to die. So what appears to be very ordinary is extraordinary. We're ordinary people, imperfect people living the spiritual life, the spirituality of imperfection. The ordinary chopping wood and carrying water is extraordinary what we get to do. It makes no sense what I get to do, giving you a talk for 12 weeks. Are you kidding me? How I'm able to show up for 12 consecutive weeks and keep a commitment and leave it all on the podium when I'm out of here. And sharing vulnerability like we do with each other. And it's not us who's doing it, but this power that we were seeking all along. I was looking for that power in the bottom of a whiskey bottle. It worked for a little while, but it didn't have endurance. And something happens when we bottom out, we collapse, there's nothing left, and we're brought into Alcoholics Anonymous, and they're talking about God. I so wish so many more meetings were talking about God. We're shouting God from the rooftops, shouting about what this power does, how it literally heals folks like us, the broken children, how it brings us back to life, the resurrection we see in all of us every day in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. There's a guy here, Freddie, sitting in the back. When he showed up sober, I didn't give him a chance, a snowball's chance in hell. The guy's like MacGyver. He's incredible. The 12-step work today, with not even a year sober, that blew me away. That's God. I'm watching the resurrection of this guy. He's my hero. And doesn't look for applause about it, just goes about his business. Walks softly and carry a big book. And when I spoke to him earlier, you know what he said? Praise God for what I'm able to do. Took no credit for his work. Guy's a hero. That's what we get to do in Alcoholics Anonymous. It's way beyond me going to a meeting. It's way beyond me spending time with my sponsor. Both are vitally important. It's way beyond me going through the steps in the big book. Vital. And taking service commitments. Vital. All those things are vehicles to take me to this power, which is allow me to do all those things. I don't do the work and say, look, I'm great. I need to get rescued. I need to get surrendered. I need to get salvation before I get traction to do the work. And I shouldn't be talking about it. There's something that goes, not by works, lest any man shall boast. Look at me. I worked so hard for my year's sobriety. Nonsense. I completely blew my life up. God rescued me, surrendered me, put me with you, and give me some endurance to follow your direction. And you say, have your fourth step done by tomorrow. We could talk about mechanics in the 11th step. I need to see mechanics in action. Talk a sermon. Let me see one. Let me see you walking. Let me see you praying. Let me see you spending time after the meeting with the newcomer. Let me see you giving all the glory to God and taking no credit for it all. Walking softly and carrying a big book. That's what God wants. That's what this whole thing's about. There's a story in a book, The Soul of Sponsorship. I was sharing with some folks today. Bill's meeting with Father Dowling. Bill's got 5 years sober. Our co-founder, this is not some cat who walked into AA. Our co-founder, Bill W., 5 years sober. You figured he's sitting pretty with a nice ride by now. He's living in a 24th Street clubhouse in New York City, flat broke. He's got cases of big books he can't sell. It's a cold winter, rainy, snowy night. Lois is still working. He's sitting there having depression, wondering, what do I do with my life? His clothes are in wooden boxes. His hangers are nails in a wall. If anyone's ever been to the 12-step house, they have a little meeting before you walk into the big meeting. Picture that little room where Bill Wilson, that's where he's living, our co-founder, flat broke. One of the gentlemen cleaning the 24th Street Clubhouse says, there's some bum down here to see you. And Bill tells a story. He says to himself, not another drunk. I can't hear another drunk anymore. I'm done. I don't want to do this anymore. People are mumbling. Bill's untreated. I don't want to hear another drunk. I'm tired. Where's my piece of the pie? And Bill says, send him up. He didn't know Father Dowling was basically crippled from arthritis and walked with this cane. He hear the thump walking up the steps, and Bill's going, oh, no. How many times did the phone ring and went, no, not now. I'm tired. I can't hear inventory. I'm not in the mood for a 12-step call. Father Dowling traveled from St. Louis to meet Bill. He walked in, and Bill saw the eyes, the spirit in his eyes. And he sat down and had a talk with Bill Wilson. And in that talk, Bill pretty much purged what we would call basically a fifth step, unloaded, and Bill flipped. Bill had this turnaround, that 180 we talk about was never the same. What if Bill said, I don't want to see him. I don't care who he is. But God sent an angel called Father Dowling to see Bill Wilson. Like how many times you get that drunk with one day is back for the 15th time. He reeks because he just came out from under a dumpster or a bridge somewhere, and he's not pleasant to look at. You say, I don't want to do this. I'm going to go home. Somebody else get him. And you sit with him, and something happens. Because if you work with drunks long enough, something happens. That God thing comes out. And we go home full, spiritually full, by emptying everything out to the drunk, even though they don't listen. This is what happened to Bill. What if he didn't listen? What if God didn't exist and that drunk never showed, and that person never showed up for Bill Wilson? There was something in Bill that said, send him up. That was the spiritual part of Bill that was starving, needed someone to teach him, to help him, to kind of push him along. Bill's GPS went out. And by the grace of God, it got ignited again. Incredible story. Our co-founder flat broke with 5 years sober. And so I see kids coming in, you know, with a year and looking for stuff right away. Got to have stuff. I need a vape this big, you know. I'm lonely. I don't have a relationship. How long are you sober? 20 minutes. Okay, hang out. How am I doing on time? Okay. In thinking about my day, I may face indecision. I may not be able to determine which course to take. I ask God for inspiration, truth of thought, or decision. I relax and take it easy. I don't have to struggle. Struggle is an allusion to the truth anyway. You know, struggle. Just wait. One of the most difficult things for me as a drunk to do is do nothing. To just wait for God. You know, come on, God. When our book talks about pause, when agitated or doubtful, that pause can be a day. It could be 10 minutes. I'm not in charge of how long. My book is telling me don't do anything, just be still. God will inspire you. God will send in a Father Dowling for you. And it'll click. It'll make sense. And sometimes when I pause and take no action, an hour later I go in, thank God I did nothing. You know, I'm going to call them up and tell them how I feel. And something says, no, don't do that. And then they call you up to make amends and the relationship is mended. And you say, thank God I just didn't react like a drunk again. That's that God thing we get to experience. And my practice has changed over the years since I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. I was praying. I wasn't meditating. And then I was shown the importance of meditation. To go into darkness to see and silence to hear. The first time I meditated was about 2 minutes. A woman put me on a timer. She was an expert, like in this meditation. She lived in an ashram. That's all she did. She knew what she was talking about. And she told me about the importance of posture and breath. Posture and breath. Posture and breath. I've gobbled up many books over the years. Posture and breath. The same theme runs through all of them. I don't have to go to some mountain and shave my head. I can meditate right in my own house. I can meditate in the back room there. I just need to be still and listen. And the first time I meditated, I realized how noisy I am. We get used to the noise. You know, you had the TV on and you get a phone call and you just talk over the TV. And then at one point you go, shut that off, and you turn it off. You go, whoa. We get used to the noise in the head. We just talk over it. All the voices screaming at me. And you go into meditation, this forced place of stillness. You realize, oh my God, it's still going. It's like a runaway train. And it gets really uncomfortable. And experiencing that kind of silence, that kind of stillness, is actually more uncomfortable than getting comfortable. Until I get used to living that way, then how could I not meditate? How could I not spend at least 10 minutes a morning doing nothing in stillness? There are people who say, oh, people meditate to escape reality. My pushback is, no, we go to meditate to experience the only reality that exists, God. And only in the silence, only in presence can I experience this power. Only in the barren emptiness, void, null and void of in here will I experience an abundance of God. When I got stuff around me or dependent upon stuff to bring me God, it's just going to get me in a mood, but it's not going to bring me God because I'm worshiping stuff. I'm worshiping idols rather than the power. I got bells and chimes and sage and candles and all sorts of stuff. They're all going at once. That's nice. It's good. It creates an atmosphere, especially if you're new. I encourage that. CDs that help you meditate. All good stuff. We need all the help we can get. But at some point, I need to meet God in the raw with nothing and take me like the wretch I am. Ah, but we won't go there. Because going that quiet, getting that still, getting that empty with no defense, I just might hear something I don't want to hear. I might get information or a message that I really don't want to be bothered with. I just want to do my little check-in with God, do a little meditation, tell you I'm meditating and I'm zen. And I'm really doing nothing. And the only one I'm fooling is myself. So on awakening, there's some prayers I work with, some prayers that are very close to me. I always pray for people. I pray for the best friend of my whole life every morning, Marion. I pray for my dad and my family, some friends who are sick, the men I sponsor, offer their name, always closing with your will, not mine be done. Who am I? And I surrender me. I love the third step prayer. I love the seventh step prayer. They just speak to me. Our Lord's Prayer, Serenity Prayer. The words convey a thought, doesn't really express the depth of what we're trying to talk about to God, but it helps me center. And when I'm done doing that, I sit in posture and breath, and I have a mat, and I sit in a very comfortable posture, and I wait, just breathing in and breathing out, counting breaths. Sometimes I take a phrase or a word or an idea or a thought or a picture into my mind, and I meditate on that. And I just be still and let God lead me. And what has happened over the years, the first one was about 9 years sober, just plowing the field, chopping wood, carrying water, doing this work with no expectations that I was going to turn to Moses because I'm doing it. It's what you do. I love the effect produced by it. When the ground was fertile enough, one day God said, now, and gave me literally a life-changing experience. It was my Father Dowling moment, if you will. And I walked away knowing that I am known by my God. That something had happened many years before. And I bargained and petitioned and pleaded and negotiated with God. He said, not now. But 9 years into sobriety, he said, now. And he followed up with a few more, and then a few more, and a few more. And one of the great things about living in a world of the Spirit, when miracles happen, you're not like, oh my God, it's a miracle. What else is God doing? But performing miracles all day long. We're sitting in these chairs tonight. Look at the miracle. We're not supposed to be here. We're supposed to be drunk and high. We're not supposed to be doing this. Whether you got one day or 20 years, you're not supposed to be here based on our track record. But according to God, we're right where we're supposed to be. Seeking, trying to get well. When I get home at night, when I retire at night, Monday nights I'm home with sponsor night. I get a guy I sponsor calls me, go over some inventory, that's at 6. And at 7 o'clock I call my sponsor. And we're on the phone for about an hour, sometimes longer. There's been times when it's been shorter, but usually at least an hour, because he likes to go. And unless it's a 911, if you try to call me on Mondays between 7 and 8, I'm not picking up the phone. I'll get back to you after 8 o'clock. If it's important, text me. So I'm home early on a Monday after work. Marion's at the meeting upstairs or across the street, the Big Book meeting. And so I go into my room. As soon as I'm done with my sponsor, I do my practice because they give me some considerations. So I get out of the chair near my desk and I go to my mat, which is to the right, and I pray. And I'll write some inventory. I'll do some meditation. And I'm done. And there's times that maybe tonight I'm going to get home later. So I'm going to retire later. But my practice has been pretty much for years, and God has disciplined me to this spiritual life of writing inventory and nightly review, discussing it with the sponsor, having a life of prayer and meditation. And a bunch of years ago, this power brought me to a place, and I don't know why, I have no clue why, of doing this three times a day. Now, I'm in a business that's insane. I'm in treatment center business. You have no idea from moment to moment what's going to happen. And it's really hard to get that time for yourself. You know, it's kind of like eating lunch, sending out an email, and catering to someone's needs of the day. They're about to blow up because they can't find shoelaces. Oh my God, I'm going to go use. But I need to make my time, my centering time. And sometimes I close my office door. Sometimes I'll go into the restroom. Sometimes I go sit in my car and go for a drive. I'll sit in the Publix parking lot and just sit in my car and talk to my God again. Just me and him. And I sound like that. So it's been three times a day for a long time. I don't expect any kind of applause. It doesn't make me bigger spoke in the wheel than you. It's just my path. And something happens when we're walking in the sunlight of the Spirit. Don't claim to be perfect. But there's more acceptance to what others are doing. Sometimes I will tell the men I sponsor close to me, you need to be doing more of this. I got to give them truth. But I'm not the cop of AA and telling people what they're supposed to be doing, because how do I know what journey they're on, what path God put them on? Maybe it's not their time to get into the Big Book. Maybe the sponsor that I object to is perfect for them. I learned firsthand, there's a cat from the Southwest who gets out speaking a lot, wants me banned from AA because I work in treatment, doesn't want me near a podium because I work in a treatment center business, has thrown me under a bus for the last 4 years regularly. I don't want to be that guy and be the guardian of AA. I want to be a spoke in a wheel. How do I know what path you're on? And who am I to say what path you need to be on? If you come to me, I'll show you the path I walked. And it'll be a path, hopefully, to get you to the same power I pray to. God's ways are always beyond my cleverest plans. Always. My insight only goes so far. My depth and weight only goes so far. It might be more than others, but only so far. I don't have the endurance to hang in there. I don't have the strength to face every day. And there's been many times on this path, over 29 years, I've been afraid. Why lay in bed and I'm afraid? I'm not going to be successful. I'm never going to have enough money to take care of my future wife. I'm not going to be successful. I'm going to get sick. I'm getting close to 60. My number's about to come up. My dad's turning 80. When am I going to get the call? I'm afraid. And who can I tell I'm afraid? I'll front. I'll man up. I'll be the protector. But I'm afraid. And sometimes I'm angry. And sometimes I feel betrayed by others. And my heart hurts. The business I'm in, I can't see myself doing anything else. But betrayal is a regular thing. You throw your blood at someone to help them, and they look to sue you the following week. Now, that doesn't, I don't mean that literally, but just to create a picture. And you say, how? I spent hours with you, weeks and months with you. And they look at you like you're invincible. You're Teflon. And you go home and you weep because your heart hurts. where you hear someone dies in an OD. And you go home, you put your head on a pillow, you hold it a little tighter because it's not you, but your heart hurts because they were sitting in a chair last week right in front of you, and they're gone. And the only refuge I can seek after speaking to Marion, after calling my sponsor, is back to my God, and my God draws me closer. We were called to sanctity. We were born to be saints, like it or not. And God will go to any lengths to get our attention, to get my attention. We'll remove things, and in the removal of things, he's actually trying to give me stuff. God's gifts, a lot of times, I perceive as removal. How could you do this to me, God? He says, how could I not do this to you? That little baby that was running around, if she picked up a sharp object, mama's going to take it out of her hand, and the baby's going to say, that's my toy. How could you do this to me? And mama's trying to protect her from harm. So I seek. My life is one of service. And I continue to seek experience. I can study scripture. I can study the book. I can study lots of spiritual books and get a head full of knowledge. But I need to seek experience. There's a gentleman, Thomas Merton, tells a story, and I'm going to do damage to it, but the gist of it is this, that there were some monks who were into studying scripture and writing and studying and writing and studying and writing. And there were others who were plowing the field and in the trenches. And both felt they were doing it right. And Merton says the great teacher is the one who studies the information and then gets in the field and gets his hands dirty in the mud and gets down there with others. The carpenter looked at the folks around him and said, why can't civilians go in the back of the room? Why can't the regular, ordinary people go where you go? Why do you sit at the head of the table? Why do they have poor clothes on and you walking around in fancy garments? They didn't like him. But he also says, do what they say, but not what they do. My job is to make those two meet. Seek God and then pass it on. Seek God and then pass it on. That's doing God's work. We can memorize this big book till the cows come home. What am I doing when I'm out there? What am I doing when I'm in Publix? What am I doing on 95 and a knucklehead is tailgating me? What do I do when I'm just going to work and I don't feel like being at work today? Who am I seeking? Am I seeking some sort of refuge from external things and demanding that people give me stuff so I feel okay? Or am I seeking God? And maybe today's just not my day. But I still seek God. So this work, this 11-step, this meditation has allowed me on most days to practice some love and forgiveness. And I found this journey has a lot to do with forgiving or making amends. Forgiving or making amends. I need to make amends to someone or I need to forgive them. Last thing, I've shared this a million times from the podiums. I'm drunk. It was right before I got thrown out of this apartment that I had in Brooklyn. I remember sitting on the edge of this blood-stained, soiled bed, a mattress, cigarette holes in it, and I'm in and out. And I'm having this crying jag, and I'm hollering and cursing, and I'm in and out. I almost had like this out-of-body experience. I can almost see myself in this horrible condition. And I'm pointing at God. And I says, you never even let me say goodbye to my mom, you SOB. You cruel thing. A lot of F-bombs cursing at God. And I made a bargain with God. He says, if you bring my mom back from wherever she is right now, I'll quit drinking. This is drunk as a skunk. Yeah, we do things like this. I don't remember what happened afterwards. But that first experience I had in prayer and meditation 9 years into recovery, I'm sitting in meditation. When we meditate, you know, we're conscious that I'm breathing and posture and breath, and then we come out of meditation. And every once in a while, there's this other piece, this door we go through. There's no mind door where we're taken somewhere. There's no thought. There's nothing. There's void. It's a spiritual place. You don't even know you're in meditation. It's an experience with this power. And in this meditation, I find myself sitting on a beach. God knows I love the beach. I love the water. I feel safe by the ocean. And on the horizon, out on the horizon comes the carpenter walking towards me. And literally out of his chest appears my mom expressing oneness. And my mom walked towards me, and I became this little 8-year-old boy, and my mom kneeled down on one knee and held on to her little 8-year-old son. When mom would hold on to me when I was 8, the world was a good place. I think most guys would say that when mama holds you at that age, it's groovy. Everything's good. It's good. The wounds go away. The teacher who's bothering you goes, everything's cool. And then I turned into an adult, and my mom held on to me again, gave me a big hug, a big mama hug. Now, all these 9 years, I'm lighting candles in church, lighting 2 candles, one for the sick and suffering and one for my mom. Make prayer out the door. Once a week, at least, for 9 years. And in this meditation, my mom pointed off to the horizon. This way, pointed off to the horizon. That way, pointed at all these flickering lights. I didn't know what the lights were. All these thousands, hundreds, flickering lights. My God put his arm around me and looked me right in the eye, almost sunk into his eyes. And without saying a word, he said, "She's okay, she's with me." And my mom held on to me once more. I remember there were tears rolling down her cheeks. She was weeping, but they weren't sorrowful ones. They were joyful ones. She was okay. And she walked off, and her and my God became one, and I came out of meditation. I found myself weeping. So first thing you do is you call your sponsor and share the experience you had with him that I just had. Without missing a beat, he said, "Peter, haven't you been lighting candles for your mom about 9 years?" I said, "Yeah." He says, "She got them. There's another dimension that you're able to touch, knowing that I am, knowing my creator, my God, our God hears the heart. He knows the soul. Let me seek that which the soul loves. That's God. The soul knows where to go, what to say, what to do. I just need to touch it." And it happens in that emptiness, that stillness, that quietness, where the world goes away for a few minutes. I'm not avoiding, I'm just seeking God, the only power that really exists. And he will say, "Now, I'm with you. Do you still doubt me, ye of little faith?" I've never been the same. Never been the same. Even though I've doubted, even though I was uncertain, even though I was frightened, I've never been the same. So I'll continue to seek. That's all I got. Peace.
All right, let's thank Peter one more time. It's amazing. And we got lovely Stephanie coming up to do our secretary's report.
Hi, my name is Stephanie, and I'm your recovered alcoholic secretary. In keeping with the seventh tradition, which states that every group shall be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions, the baskets are now going around. I have asked Chelsea to read the recovered statement. We read this notice to explain why many people in this group identify as recovered rather than recovering, and what it exactly means to be a recovered alcoholic.
Chelsea, alcoholic. Recovered. We are not cured of alcoholism. Recovered but not cured. That presents a conflict to some alcoholics. If we were cured, we would be able to drink responsibly. No, we are not cured. The allergic reaction to alcohol will remain with us for our lifetime. But we have been restored to sanity. That was the problem. The main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind rather than in his body. We are now sane where alcohol is concerned. Consequently, we have recovered.
...1940-style Big Book sponsorship. From 4 to 2nd edition Alcoholics Anonymous. Of alcoholics who came to AA and really tried, 50% got sober at once and remained that way. 25% sobered up after some relapses, and among the remainder, those who stayed on with AA showed improvement. What we've seen, felt, come to believe, and experience is that God has not changed over time, and neither should the sacred approach back to his loving arms. The statistics above suggest a 75% success rate. May I please see a show of hands of recovered alcoholics? Is there anyone in need of a sponsor? Please raise your hand. May you please stand? Oh, and so, ladies, let's meet them at the front and get these women back to God. Please join us Monday nights for the Big Book Study meeting where the Big Book comes alive. Fellowship is at 6:30 and the Big Book Study starts at 7:15. We have large print Big Books and Big Book dictionaries for sale. We meet every Thursday starting promptly at 7:15, and we ask that you be courteous and ready to begin at the sound of the bells. See you next week.
Thank you. All right, we have tonight's session and all the past speaker podcasts online for free at alcoholicsandgod.org. I'd like to invite everyone to our Monday night Big Book study, and those whom wish to thank tonight's speaker, please line up down the center aisle. And we are going to close seated with the Lord's Prayer. Our Father, all right, have a good night. See you guys next week. Never again, now that I understand.
Oh, when you're smiling, when you're smiling, the whole world smiles with you, baby, baby. Yes, when you're laughing. When you're laughing, yes, the sun comes shining through. But when you're crying, you bring on the rain. Stop your sighing, baby, and be happy again. Yes, and keep on smiling. Keep on smiling, baby. And I hope.